Yo, yo, what's going on, big dogs? Welcome into another episode of Adams Plus One, another mailbag edition. We've got tons of questions, football, bodybuilding, and even some Madden that we got in the mailbag. So let's dive in. First question, who is the most overrated quarterback in the league right now? I mean, that just depends on what part of the season we were in this last year. But I just think overall, I would have to say Jalen Hurts. See a lot of Philadelphia fans going into this season and a lot of people on TV talking about how Jalen Hurts should be considered a top five quarterback going into the season after a Super Bowl run and a win. There was a poll where GMs voted on tiers of quarterbacks, and the only quarterbacks in the NFL to be rated tier one, and there were three or four tiers, but tier one meaning, you know, hands down, slam dunk, elite quarterbacks, Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow. Now, I would argue that Josh Allen should be in that category as well, even Lamar. But Jalen Hurts didn't get one tier one vote. However, that was from the front office perspective. So those are like GMs in the NFL that had their take. Yet people on TV, I think they're just way too focused in on, they put so much weight on the Eagles winning games, and they give a lot of credit to Jalen Hurts. But if you even look at last year's Super Bowl run, go look at those games. First round of the playoffs against the Packers, he was abysmal. The team just won the game. The defense won the game. It was an ugly game. Then in the second round, they beat the Rams. Go look at Jalen Hurts' numbers versus Matthew Stafford. And think about this. Put it into context. Matthew Stafford was on the road with a warm weather team, and he was slinging the ball all over the field. Jalen Hurts went like 10 for 15 for 100 yards, took multiple really bad sacks in the game. But guess what? The offense was leaning on Saquon Barkley with 200 rushing yards. And I know I sound like I'm making excuses, but if Kyron Williams doesn't fumble a ball in that game, I think the Rams win that game. So on the way to the Super Bowl last year, Jalen Hurts really didn't play well. Look, they blew out the Commanders in the NFC title game. That Commanders team had no business being in the NFC title game. But hey, give credit to Jalen Hurts. He played well in that game. Then we look at the Super Bowl, and I think this is where a lot of people get it really twisted here. People will point to that game and tell you how great Jalen Hurts played. He really didn't make big plays until the Eagles defense gave them a three-possession lead. Once he had a three-possession lead, and if you know football, it's a lot easier to play quarterback when you have a three-possession lead than when the game's in the balance. So going into the season, I feel like Jalen Hurts was very overrated. That roster was elite last year, and he did what he had to do. It's just the idea that he's a top-five quarterback. We're coming off last week when they played the Bills. He didn't complete one pass in the second half of a tight game. So all year you've noticed, this year and last year, Jalen Hurts, when asked to throw the ball more than 32 times, they have a horrible record. Something like, I think they were 0-5 last year, and they're 0-5 this year, somewhere along those lines. You can't be a top 10 quarterback if, when you're asked to throw the ball more than 32 times, which is about league average, you can't win a game when you have two great receivers, a great running back, a solid offensive line. So to me, Jalen Hurts, there's no question, very much benefits from the situation. And I think we're going to look back in 10 years. First of all, I don't think he's going to be the quarterback there much longer. I think their GM's going to draft someone this offseason. But you're going to look back in 10 years and say, wow, was he really the MVP of that Super Bowl? Wasn't it the defense? Wasn't it Cooper DeJean with the pick six that really sparked that team to win that game? So there's my most overrated quarterback in the league right now would be Jalen Hurts. Which quarterback do fans misunderstand the most when evaluating wins versus performance? Here you go. Perfect example. Look at Justin Herbert. He would be the quarterback here that fans misunderstand when they evaluate wins and performance. I just had Andrew Eck on my podcast yesterday. We were talking about, look at the offensive line performance and grades for the Chargers this year. They're 32nd in pass block winning, meaning the PFF will grade how well their offensive line performs on a down-by-down basis. They are the worst for pass blocking. They're like the second worst for run blocking. They were 32 or 31st in all the categories. However, Justin Herbert, all of his numbers are still about middle of the league, middle of the pack. That's super impressive, because what that tells you is, in a horrible situation with his best offensive lineman out. He doesn't have the best receiving core. I like Ladd McConkey. He's probably not a number one. Quentin Johnston's really coming on strong, but he hasn't been there all year. He's got an old Keenan Allen. But in a situation that isn't perfect and they really can't run the ball, Justin Herbert is elevating everyone around him. So could you just imagine if you took Jalen Hurts and you put him on the Chargers with that offensive line and those weapons, and you took Justin Herbert and you put him on the Eagles? Not only would the Eagles have won the Super Bowl last year, they would have blown every team out along the way. That's how convicted I feel the difference between a Justin Herbert and a Jalen Hurts. It's very rare. You're not going to see a metric that shows when Justin Herbert throws the ball more than 32 times, his team loses. Okay? So that would be a quarterback that I feel like fans really misunderstand, because they'll say, oh, he hasn't won a playoff game yet. Okay, calm down. You put him on the Eagles, and if he's asked to do as little as Jalen Hurts has been asked, he'd win a playoff game. Jalen Hurts is in a division with, I mean, what division are they in too? Look at Herbert. He's going against Hall of Famers in Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. He finally has a coach, and now they're going to the playoffs second year in a row. So got to go with Justin Herbert on there on that one. Next question. What's one stat fans lean on that actually tells a misleading story? Okay, this is a stat that could tell a misleading story. And I'll give you two quarterbacks as an example. Completion percentage. Obviously, you want to complete a high amount of your passes, right? 65% in this NFL is probably standard now. It used to be 60. If you completed 60% of your passes in the NFL, that was the bar. But with the shorter bubble screens and how the quick passing game has developed in the NFL, well, let's bump it to 65. But there are some fans out there that will look at a guy like a Caleb Williams, and I'm a Bears fan, I get that, and they'll say, oh, but look, Caleb Williams is only completing 59% of his passes. He's not accurate. Well, if you look at a game like a few weeks ago, Caleb Williams threw the ball like 34 times. 8 of those throws were throwaways for incompletions. So the decision was, let's not turn the ball over or take a sack, we'll throw the ball away. On the other passes, he was like 19 of 20, whatever it was, 26. So on the passes that he actually threw down the field, he was accurate. But it's very simple for a fan to say, well, wait a second, 58%, he's not accurate, he has an accuracy issue. So that could be misleading from the perspective of a quarterback having a low completion percentage and just leaning on the completion percentage as telling the whole story. But let's flip that, and let's look at a quarterback who has a high passing completion percentage, but is it very impactful? Let's talk about a guy like Tua. Tua Tagovailoa has had 73% completion percentage in for seasons and years. But is that just empty calories? Because you're taking these short, easy completions, but you're not pushing the ball down the field, making the defense defend every inch of grass. And it really doesn't lead to points. Caleb Williams, a 58% completion percentage, the Bears are one of the top scoring teams in the NFL, and they lead the league in explosives. You know what I mean? And you look at someone like, and Caleb doesn't turn the ball over. So what do you want? Do you want a guy that completes 59% of his passes, leads the league in explosives with that offense? Or do you want a guy that completes 73% of his passes, doesn't lead the league in explosives, and turns the ball over? Well, that's Tua. He can't really extend the play either. So you really have to be careful with completion percentage. And I like to brag as a Joe Burrow guy. Look at Joe Burrow completing 72% of his passes, but Joe Burrow throws the ball down the field as well. So I would say that's a stat that can be pretty misleading, is the completion percentage. The other stat that can be misleading is when you hear these people on sports talk radio say, oh, this defense is fifth in rushing. They're giving up the fifth least amount of yards in rushing this season. Well, that's just a blanket number. And I'll give you a specific example. Last year, the Bears played the Jaguars overseas. Going into the game, I heard people on sports talk radio saying, oh, the Bears aren't going to be able to run the ball this week because the Jaguars are fifth in the league against the run. And they were just talking about how many yards they were giving up per game. But here's the thing. Why is that misleading? Because they were 32nd against the pass. So what the story should have been is that nobody needed to run the ball against them because they were throwing the ball all over the lot. So you got to be careful with those numbers. Andrew Ack was on my pod yesterday, like I said, and he mentioned how you really got to look at success rate. And what that means, I'll keep it layman's terms, when a team knows you're going to run the ball, can they stop you? I think that's a more accurate way to look at that. So I'd say those two stats, completion percentage for a quarterback, and anytime you just look at blanket yards per game for rushing or passing, there's more to the story than that. Because every game is its own game, and matchups create a fight just like matchups create a football game. Next question. Who is one player in the NFL whose impact can't be replaced by scheme? Ooh, this is a really tough question. Okay. I would have said Aaron Donald when he was in the NFL because he just jumps off. I think of when I see this question, I really think of defensive linemen who can create havoc. Man, it's hard not to just go with Myles Garrett. Yeah, I'd go with Myles Garrett. He's a freak. It wouldn't matter what scheme you put that guy in. I know the Browns, if you watch, they play a really wide, their defensive ends line up really wide. Their idea is to get him going like on a straight beeline to the quarterback, and they're just coming downhill. They're playing the QB and then the run, but it wouldn't matter. You could put him in any position. I think linebacker and core and defensive line, he'd make an impact. We'll go with Myles Garrett. But second in that would be Jalen Carter. I think Jalen Carter is just an absolute baller for the Eagles. What a great player that can just, again, closer to the quarterback as a defensive tackle, can just impact. He can push the pocket. He can stop the run. Draws a lot of attention. Wouldn't matter what scheme you put him in either. Just so happens to be with Vic Fangio as a defensive coordinator who sort of has one of the best schemes in the NFL right now and has for a while. Next question. What playoff matchup do you not want your team to see? I'm a Bears fan, so they're most likely here in a few hours. They're going to play the Lions. Even if the Bears lose and the Eagles lose because the Eagles are resting their starters, they're most likely going to get the 2 seed. So let's just say the Bears get the 2 seed. Let's just say that, okay? Let's not quabble, okay? Or squabble, if that's how they say it. They're going to play Green Bay, okay? I've already made my mind up. I don't love that for the Bears. Even though on paper, it is the best matchup because the Packers are really beat up. Jordan Love will be coming off of this injury from the concussion. He's not even going to play until... he hasn't played since he played the Bears in Soldier Field, but anytime you play a team 3 times, they just know each other so well, anything can happen. So I don't love it as a fan of the team perspective. That's probably more emotional. The Bears should be able to run the ball. If you watch the game the Ravens had against the Packers last week, the Bears should be able to find a way to run the football and dominate the game. But we will see. I will say from a personnel and everything else in coaching, it would be really tough for the Bears, even though they would host this game. If it ends up the NFC title game is in Chicago, and I think that's how it would end up happening, and they're hosting the Rams, man, that's tough. Because you just do an instant comparison, coach to coach, both great coaches and schemers, McVay and Ben Johnson. But man, McVay has experience edge. Then you go to, you know, quarterbacks. Well, Matthew Stafford has won a Super Bowl, been in a lot of big games, and it's not a knock. I don't think that means Caleb won't play well in a big game. It's just they have experience together, McVay and Stafford, in big games. So that would be tough, and the Bears cannot get a pass rush. I think Stafford would dice them up. He's played in Chicago a ton in his career. I think they'd love that opportunity to go into a cold weather environment. And it would be a tough one. So I think emotionally, wouldn't love to see the Packers, but I've already accepted it's most likely going to happen. But schematically and in personnel, the Rams, man, those are they're tough. If the Bears see the Niners again since they lost last night, it would be in Chicago. I think they'd have a better shot, even though that scheme gave them fits too. But yeah, I'd go with Stafford. Okay, next question. Who is the most valuable non-quarterback in the league? I just answered Myles Garrett and Jalen Carter for doesn't matter what scheme you put them in, but the most valuable non-quarterback in the league, man, it's hard not to say Christian McCaffrey with the year that he had. He had such an impressive year. And the Niners were one home game away last night of winning from going to the 1 seed. So I'd say, I'll list a few, but I'd say Christian McCaffrey, just this year. Let's not talk about moving forward, just this year. Jahmyr Gibbs is special, man. I think Jahmyr Gibbs is one of the very few players in the league that it does not matter where you give him the football. He can, as Chris Sims says, he has three rockets up his ass. He can score from anywhere on the field, and that's so valuable. Because if you ask yourself right now, like, whatever you're doing, what does my favorite team, fill in that team name, I'm a Bears fan, and I love Joe Burrow, so you can say a Bengals fan, but my friends will get mad if I say that. Do we have a player like Jahmyr Gibbs that it doesn't matter where they're at on the field, they can score from anywhere? As a Bears fan, the only player that sort of, I would say, that fits is maybe Luther Burden and maybe DeAndre Swift, but it's not a slam dunk. And I'm just saying, I'm trying to find a guy. For the Bengals, they have Ja'Marr Chase, and that guy can score from anywhere on the field. But you go around the league, not many teams have a guy like that. The Cowboys have Turpin. Seattle has Shaheed. But Jahmyr Gibbs is a running back that can do that. And that's special. Saquon Barkley's probably like that still. So I'll go with CMC, and I'll also toss in Jahmyr Gibbs. I think those guys are very, very valuable non-quarterbacks that you just got to get the ball in their hands. Okay, next question. We're sticking with football here. A lot of questions about football. What NFL take do you refuse to back down from? And I know the person that submitted this knows what I want to say, so I'm going to say what you know that you want me to say, okay? Aaron Rodgers is not a top five quarterback of all time. He's a great player. He had a great career. He was a regular season warrior. He was big in. Here's my take on Aaron Rodgers. More highlight throws. Okay, give him the MVPs. So set the MVPs aside. But more highlight throws than signature wins in his career. And he won a Super Bowl early. He had a miraculous run. He played amazing against the Falcons on that run. Go look at the numbers. Aaron Rodgers was phenomenal. I think that was the best game of his career. And the Super Bowl a few weeks later after they beat the Bears in the NFC title game, which he didn't play well in. But the Super Bowl, he was awesome in the Super Bowl too. Well earned. But since then, it's been more Hail Mary passes or off-platform throws, beautiful throws, and MVPs in the regular season. In my opinion, beating up on bad teams. But in the moments where you really needed him, just like last week against the Browns, a team that's not very good, and if you win, you clinch the division, he just comes up small. And he did it against the Niners multiple times, and he did it against the Lions a few years ago. Anytime there's there are expectations, it just seems like Aaron Rodgers comes up small. They'll show his numbers in the regular season, 115, 110 passer rating, and how great he's playing. And then in the playoff game, that really matters. The numbers fall off. So I'll never back down from that, because the longer he plays, he's just validating exactly how I've always felt. And the reason I'm very strong on it is because when we look back at history, don't mention to me Aaron Rodgers with Tom Brady. They're not even in the same ballpark. Not even in the same ballpark. So that's a take I'm very strong on. And I'll get this from a lot of people. You're just saying it because you're a bitter Bears fan. Aaron Rodgers owned the Bears. But the problem with that is everyone has owned the Bears. The Bears have been a bad franchise for a while, guys, like a long time. Most of my life, they've had a few years where they were good, good defenses. But to pound your chest in your career that you beat up on the Bears, who have had however many quarterbacks they've had while the Packers have had two or three, it's not a really good, like, achievement. And the way that I'd address that, like, do you ever see Tom Brady walking around saying, I owned the Jets during my time with the Patriots? Well, of course he did own the Jets, but everyone owns the Jets. The Jets suck. The Bears stunk for a long time. So there's the take. Aaron Rodgers not a top five quarterback. More highlight throws than signature wins. Next question. What's one trend in modern offenses you think will disappear soon? I don't know if I'll say disappear, but we'll see less of it. The NFL is very cyclical. So if you go back about 10 years ago or maybe 10 or 12 years ago, offenses really started spreading out and attacking all over the field, throwing the ball all over. So, but then defenses adjusted, and you saw how they adjusted in personnel by drafting guys that could play like that hybrid safety linebacker. Right? You think of guys like, ooh, I'm thinking of his name. I can see it. He played for the Patriots. It'll come to me. But we've had a lot of players that could play like that hybrid linebacker safety for more speed in the field to cover these tight ends and wide receivers when the offense goes three or four wide. So then eventually, what do NFL teams do? Like the Lions, like the Eagles, they start to play bully ball and they say, okay, defenses want to play light, we're going to go into 11 personnel or 12 personnel, right? And we're going to run the ball right at you, forcing you to kind of play in your base defense. So now you've seen offenses get more under center, more power run game. Well, then defenses are going to adjust. That's how it's just going to happen. So once the defenses adjust, which I'm sure we'll see that, I think you'll see offenses make their adjustment, whether that's going back to the spread. So not so much that you're going to see less and less under center. I just think you're going to see less and less power run game because defenses will adjust, and then offenses will do the same. Who is the most clutch player in the league and why? I mean, this is a layup. It's Patrick Mahomes. I mean, it the dude's won 3 Super Bowls, been to 5. That comeback against the Niners in his first Super Bowl down 10 in the fourth quarter was awesome. Then the most recent Super Bowl, was anybody anywhere thinking that the Chiefs were going to lose when they held the Niners to a field goal? No. You knew what was going to happen. Patrick Mahomes was down 3, basically playing 4 down territory the whole way. He's going to score, and he did, and it was awesome. And that's why he's the man right now. There's your argument. If someone tried to tell me, oh, Aaron Rodgers is greater than Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes, go look at his numbers in the playoffs. He's as good and sometimes better in the playoffs than the regular season. And he's a great regular season player, but you know, it's not even close when you look at, you know, Aaron Rodgers compared to some of the greats. I mean, even Josh Allen, man. Josh Allen has lost some games in the playoffs in big moments, but balled out. Show me a game with Aaron Rodgers where he balled out and they lost in a playoff game or a big game. I'd love to see it. You won't find it. I promise you that. And if you do, send it to me. We can talk about it. You can come on the podcast. We can talk about it. What's the smartest front office in football right now? Oh, there's so many good ones. The Lions have drafted really well. Awesome front office. You just look at their team, look at Amon Ra, you look at their right tackle, you look at Aiden Hutchinson, Jahmyr Gibbs. They got laughed at when we were watching the draft, and they were getting laughed at when they took Jahmyr Gibbs as high as they did, and Jack Campbell. They're awesome. They're up there. I'd say the Lions are up there. That's why it's hard to write them off, even though they missed the playoffs. They're so good at drafting. Then I'd say the Eagles, man, tough. They're Jeffrey Lurie, the owner, right? And then Howie Roseman, the GM. Those guys are on the same wavelength, and that's huge. But they're just always ahead of everyone. They're set up so well that when a guy like Jalen Carter falls in the draft because of personality issues, who jumps up to get him? The Eagles. And the rich get richer, essentially. But they identify talent, and it's impressive. If you look at the Eagles, like, how many franchises would sign a guy like Carson Wentz to a big contract, it not work out, but then they immediately fix it. They fire Doug Peterson, a Super Bowl winning coach, and then they flip it, and now you've got, you know, Sirianni, and he's went to 2 Super Bowls. I would not shock me if they draft a quarterback this offseason. They can't get rid of Hurts next year. He's got to play next year. But it would not shock me if they get rid of Hurts the year after, and before you know it, they're in another Super Bowl with a different quarterback, and who knows, maybe a different head coach. They're just that speaks volumes about how the MVP in that building is their GM for the Eagles. I think the Chiefs are really good too. I think they've done a great job. If you look at some of the players they've added, Texans. I got to give the Texans a lot of credit, man. They turned that thing around quick, and now look at their defense. They've just loaded up. You know, Stingley, their defensive end. Nah, they're great too. Any others that really pop out? Yeah, I would say those ones. So I'd go with those: Chiefs, Houston, Eagles, Lions. I think the Eagles are in a class of their own. All right, moving to more bodybuilding questions. Adam, what's the biggest mistakes you see lifters make when they start out in the gym? It's kind of a mistake I see just about a lot of people make, even if they're not beginners. It's lifting too heavy. I think so many people care, and I'm going to guess here because I watch people lift when I'm at the gym, and it's not like I'm creeping on people, but I notice people care so much about how much weight they're lifting, and you just got to get over that. Like, who cares? I was at the gym the other day training, and there's a kid next to me at my local gym, and I'm not trying to be mean here, guys, okay? There's nothing wrong with this. But you can tell he's young, probably in high school, maybe the kid might weigh 100 pounds. There's nothing wrong with that either. Hey, my senior year of high school, I weighed 110 pounds. I was tiny. But he was curling, like, he was trying to curl 35-pound dumbbells with really sloppy form. And it's just sad because he's standing next to me and I'm curling 30-pound dumbbells, super slow, super controlled. And, you know, for me, when I watch, like, The Rock training in videos and I see him doing side dumbbell lateral raises, something I say to people all the time, I've seen The Rock using, like, 15- and 20-pound dumbbells for side lateral raises. This is Dwayne Johnson, the freaking Rock. Dude is, what is he, 6'6", 6'5", 260, 270 pounds, whatever he is, just jacked. If The Rock can use 20-pound dumbbells on the side lateral raise, Adam doesn't need to be trying to use 55 and 60s, okay? I can probably get a good lift with something that's a little more modest. Am I controlling it? Am I using my delt? So I just say, you know, the ego lifting with the weight is, you know, something I see. And who cares about your one rep max, man? What really matters, in my opinion, and this is just my take, is the way I like to bodybuild. Don't think about your one rep max for bench, for example. What can you bench on incline dumbbell for 8 reps and you count to 4 on every rep on the negative? 1, 2, 3, 4, up. What can you do for 8 reps like that? That's your max. That's your PR. Focus on that. And are you feeling it in your chest, right, on an incline bench? So those are the things that really matter. And I get it. We all want to look cool, but you know what looks cool? Getting better and doing it right. That's what looks cool. Next question. What's one training principle you'll never stop believing in? Slow is smooth. Smooth is fast. Basically what I just said, but I'm a huge fan of time under tension. I don't think every working set that you do needs to be, you know, 3 to 4 seconds on the negative. But every time I train, there's always one workout that's all time under tension focused. So I'm big on time under tension. And the concept is slow is smooth, smooth is fast. We're not in a race. If I'm doing tricep extensions with a dumbbell over my head, if I can do 10 reps in 10 seconds, I didn't put my enough tension on my triceps, right? That's not long enough. I need to reach hypertrophy. You need to be there for 30 seconds. And I say hypertrophy as a funny way. I know it's probably really said hypertrophy, but I love saying hypertrophy. Hypertrophy. Say it out loud. You'll probably like it too. Okay. Last gym question. Adam, what is the most underrated movement for building muscle? Well, everyone wants to have good arms. I feel like that's, maybe I'm wrong, chest, arms for guys, so I'm probably speaking to the dudes. And girls, too. I know girls want to have some nice-looking arms. You don't want flabby arms. So I would say the most underrated movements for building muscle, single-arm dumbbell overhead extension. Not with two hands, just one. I think it is such an elite movement for the tricep because, number one, you have to. I do it standing, so that's good for your core while you're standing and balancing. Number two, you're doing there's three muscles in your tricep. So that's why if you have bigger triceps, your arms are going to appear bigger than with your biceps because biceps, bi for two. So focusing on that will, you know, they say will make your arms look bigger, but you're also more specifically focusing on the long head of the tricep, which in my opinion, from what I can tell, from what I've seen, it will definitely make your tricep appear bigger. I think the long head is the biggest head of the triceps. If I'm wrong about that, the science community, please call me out. But that's why I like the single arm dumbbell overhead extension for tricep, because you're focusing on the muscle in your arm that if you build it, your arms are going to appear bigger because it's a bigger muscle group. And it specifically is focusing on that long head. So when someone's standing behind you, they'll see kind of like a bowing line in terms of how your tricep will pop out. So yeah, there you go. Try it. I love it. It's in every tricep day. I do it with a cable too, but I prefer it with a dumbbell. All right. Last few questions are Madden and gaming focused. Okay. This is pretty cool. Adam, what is the most broken play or concept in Madden this year? The kickoff, man. People do that dirty kickoff where they kick the ball off and it like bounces everywhere and it's impossible because for whatever reason, the game doesn't have your player automatically go and pick up the ball. That happened this morning. Pretty upset about that. Not going to talk about it any more than that. Next question. Adam, how much does Madden actually reflect real football? Nowadays, a ton. Back in the day, like 10, 15 years ago, maybe not as much. But now, man, like when you're playing Madden, And I get it. I'll talk about some areas where it's not as realistic. But when you just talk about identifying man versus zone coverage, like when you're looking at the defense, when you talk about how to manipulate the defense and how to attack certain coverages, when you talk about how to attack leverage, so like let's use leverage for example. If I'm playing with the Bengals and I'm in a condensed formation in the gun, and I notice that this guy's playing inside leverage, but I've got Ja'Marr Chase, you know, lined up close to the line of scrimmage. Well, he's inside leverage, so he's shutting anything down where I go across his face. So I'll just toss Ja'Marr Chase on a corner route, right? Now he has leverage because this Ja'Marr has leverage because this corner is inside. Those are things you learn when you're playing the game. But if I tried to run a slant, well, he's inside, so I don't want to run a slant against that, against man coverage. So you can learn things like that. I think the other area you can learn for zone coverage, let's just say someone's playing a basic cover three. They're playing basic cover three. You can really understand, okay, I want to attack this coverage and the rules in this coverage. So cover three, the outside corner on the right side, for example, he's got 1/3 of the field. So as that corner drops, then you have the underneath hook zone coverage. You've got two defenders. How can I place three offensive players over there, spaced out accordingly, and then read whichever defender I want to attack? So you could run a sail route on the inside slot receiver. The outside receiver can run a go route. That go route's going to take that corner with him. Then you got the sail route. He's going to kind of replace that outside receiver on like a corner, essentially, corner out. And you toss your tight end in the flat. We're going to read that hook zone defender. Is the hook zone defender going to get enough depth to take away the sail route, or is he going to come up on the flat route? So that's how you can learn when you're playing Madden how a quarterback has to learn how to read a defense in real life. And you'll see it too. Like last night, Brock Purdy against the Seahawks, he had a beautiful touch pass against the cover two zone for the Seahawks. He had to layer the throw over the corner who was in a cover two zone, so like that 5 to 10 yard area in the flat, and he layered the ball in between that corner and the safety because there was a flat route there that he looked at the flat, just got the corner to bite enough, and he made the throw. You could do that in Madden, and that's how you can learn. So hopefully that makes sense. That's a lot of talking, but I think you can learn a lot by playing Madden, and it really helps understand why. I think it helps for people who don't play Madden. Go play Madden, and then you'll struggle. Like you've never played. If you've never played, or even if you have and you were never really good at it because you didn't stick with it, go play Madden and then realize that you're doing it with a controller in your hand. Now imagine it's Joe Burrow, right? And he's in a real environment. It's super loud on the road, and they're playing press man, and they're all out pressuring. You're like, good luck. It's hard. It's hard to play quarterback is my point. And they got to read things quick because they're getting hit. So it's really difficult to play quarterback in the NFL is what you'll realize. And then I hope you could then appreciate the guys who can do it at an elite level consistently, like the Patrick Mahomes, like the Josh Allens, like the Joe Burrows of the world. So I think Madden can help you have an appreciation for that. All right, Adam, what is more important in Madden? Scheme, stick skills, or roster? Let's push roster aside. I think if you have a good scheme and great stick skills, you can overcome a roster to an extent. If you play a team who has a great run game, it can be really difficult, especially in Madden. They can get this momentum factor where it's just hard to stop the run, and it can be difficult, I'll be honest. But I think what matters most, I would say, if we broke it down by percentage, let's go like 10 to 15% on the roster, 50% on the stick skills, and then the rest on the scheme. I mean, you could say scheme and stick skills are the same. You could give them the same percentage. Really understanding how to adapt, though. So if I'm playing a guy, like I'll play players who are, I call them YouTubers, because you can tell they don't really think for themselves. They go on YouTube, they find out what great play works against in the game, and they run the same play all game. Well, eventually, if you know how to adjust your scheme and take away what they're doing, you can adjust. So not only your scheme, but your ability to adjust with your stick skills as very handy. Adam, how do you stay calm when playing Madden and Madden does Madden things? I do not. I wish I could. I don't. I'm not great at that, I'll admit. Terrible. Terrible at that. Adam, last question. What's the most satisfying way to win a game? I think the most satisfying way to win a game here, I played a guy who was ranked in the top 100 in NCAA football when it came out last year as I was grinding up, and I was like in the 200s. I was playing this kid, and he was on YouTube. He was streaming it, and he has like 50K followers. I forgot his name, but we're playing, and this was an NCAA, but it's similar to Madden, obviously. And he was running, he's just running all-go special, man. Four verticals, whatever you want to call it, Seattle, whatever. And he kept running the same route. He kept running a corner out, and I just kept giving it to him. So his inside receiver was running a corner, and I was playing cover four. So I was playing cover four. I was playing with like a safety or my linebacker. I gave it to him all game. All game I gave him the corner out, right? And I was playing cover four. So I had four deep defenders. Cover four meaning quarters. So the outside corner had a quarter. The inside safety had a quarter deep. Other inside safety had a quarter. The other corner had the other quarter. So there you go. Cover four. Four dudes covering the field. Quarters. So every time I ran quarters, he hit the corner out and he was just taking it. Now, this is what I love about strategy. Give it to him all game because it's almost like you're boxing, right? You're just giving him the jab. Then late in the game, I switch pre-snap to cover three. So now I'm no longer in cover four. And he sees it because he can tell I have only one safety in the middle of the field. But what I did was, because you can switch stick, now he's thinking, oh, he's in cover three. I'm going to take that corner out and I'm going to run a streak route down the middle and overload his cover three. What I did when the ball was snapped, I was playing my linebacker, baiting him to throw that seam route. Switch stick to the middle of the field. He threw the seam route. I picked it. Game over. Took it to the house. So that is the most satisfying way to win a game for me against really elite players that are really good. You adjust to what they're doing, but you sort of walk them into that space. Like you walk them into a situation where, you know, it's that cat and mouse game, and then you make a big play at the end. And yeah, I think that's the most exciting way to win. It's also fun to just beat my buddy Austin and do it where like he scores late with like a minute left. And he doesn't go for two, so he's up seven. And then I go on that game-winning drive where you want to score with, like, less than 10 seconds left, right? Ideally, no time. Score the touchdown, go for two, walk off, win. Speaking of walking off, we'll walk off this episode with that. So, love these mailbag questions. Really appreciate it. Those are some areas of my life that I love to talk about. Football, of course, some gym stuff, and Madden. As always, guys, you can hit me up on Instagram, YouTube, you name it. I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.